Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
You're not going to help me with the show open. You know,
help you with the podcast.
Oh, no,
open,
you don't want to help me.
No, I'll help you, but then I have to go do my show.
Oh.
You know, the one bringing in all the dollars for the network.
I mean, yes.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You laughed too hard. That was just supposed to be kind of funny.
I know. Stu Does America on Blaze TV. It's very, very good. Not as good as the show that I have premiering tonight on Blaze TV. It is episode, 203 or something like that of my sit-down conversation. This one is happening with a woman who survived the music festival in Israel. Wow. She came to the studio. The episode is entitled, I Covered Myself in Dead Bodies. It is a harrowing, unbelievable story. And you'll hear that at Blaze TV. All right. Today, podcast. We talk about Elon Musk. We talk about an out-of-control government. The truth on our air marshals that will blow your mind. The truth on security and the truth on our economy. All of that in today's podcast brought to you by Jace Medical. Jace Medical now needed more than ever. There are critical shortages of essential drugs right now in the United States. That's why I highly recommend the Jace case. I found this company, or they actually found me, 3 or 4 years ago. And when I found them, it was such a relief because I'm a prepper. I mean, I lost all my food storage and everything else in a horrible boating accident along with my guns. But one of the things that I've always worried about is, you know, I've got two of my daughters are on anti-seizure medication. What happens if there's a shortage of those drugs or there's a supply chain problem? How do I keep them not from going into seizures? Well, that's where Jace Case comes in. Jace Case starts with 5 essential antibiotics, treats the most common deadly bacterial infections, and then you can customize it. You can add on medications, and you can get them for a year's supply. So you have it on hand. You just go to jasemedical.com. That's J-A-S-E medical.com. Go online, fill out a form. They're going to have a doctor review it, et cetera, et cetera. You get the prescription, and the life-saving medications are delivered right to your door. It's jasemedical.com. Use the promo code Beck and save. jasemedical.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I got to tell you, I love Elon Musk. I do. I don't know if he's... You know, he could turn out to be some supervillain in the end. I don't know. Stranger things have already happened, so who knows? But this guy is, he's got so much FU money. You know, my dad told me, you know, what you really want to do someday is have enough money to just say FU. What does that mean, Dad? And he was like, people are going to ask you to do things and compromise and everything else. And, you know, you might think when you're younger and you don't have the money, I got to do what I got to do to put food on the table. He said, so get yourself in a situation where you can go, yeah, really? F you.
This is the real reason why the left hates billionaires. It's not because of income inequality. They don't care about income inequality at all. What they care about are people that can resist all the pressures that they put on people.
And
Elon Musk doesn't care.
Right. That's why they hate billionaires unless they're on their side. You've never heard about income inequality when it comes to George Soros, have you? Okay. So if you're on their side, but he really doesn't care. He really doesn't care. There's a new book out on Elon Musk, and it talks about his childhood with his dad just berating him all the time.
Yeah, I mean, his childhood was really rough, and his dad was, you know, according to Elon and everyone else in his family other than his dad, was very, very abusive toward him and everybody else. And one of the scenarios that they recount multiple times in the book, it's by Walter Isaacson, is that he would come home and his dad would sometimes be in good moods, right?
Right.
He'd be in good moods. He'd be a great dad. And then another time he'd come home and his dad would just tell him how stupid he was, how worthless he was, how he would never amount to anything, and berate him and berate him, berate him for hours. And he was required to stand there and take it for hours and hours and hours on end. Now, think about that as a formative experience in your life. Are you going to care what Media Matters says about you? Are you going to care what the New York Times says about you? Are you going to care about some advertiser leaving your platform?
You will hate bullies
oh, yeah.
on any mm-hmm. side, and you will defy them. One of my characteristics, and I don't know how this developed in me, but one of mine is, you tell me you can't do it. It's why I love Walt Disney and Orson Welles so much. Mm-hmm. You tell me you'll never do it. You can never do it. You'll never get past these people. Oh, you've guaranteed that now that's all I think of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you do it. He's like that with bullies. Now, here's what he said on CNBC yesterday in a live interview. Listen.
Apology tour, if you will. That this had been said online. There was all of the criticism. There was advertisers leaving. We talked to Bob Iger
today. I hope
today.
They stop.
You hope?
Don't advertise.
You don't want them to advertise?
No.
What do you mean?
If somebody's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go yourself.
But.
Go yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is. Hey, Bob, if you're in the audience.
Well, let me ask you then.
That's how I feel. Don't advertise.
Okay, so.
Wow.
So,
it's another world, right?
It's another world.
You never see stuff like that.
But isn't that what we said 12 years ago, just on a very small scale compared to him?
I mean, with less language, but
yes, yeah. But it was my money. Everybody said we couldn't do it. Everybody was trying to put us out of business. And I said, go F yourself. We're going to build it our own, and we're going to build it in a way you're not going to be able to touch us. And I said, you will beg for the days when we were just on Fox. We're having the best ratings, everything now than we've ever had in my career. It looks like these are the days where you would beg for me just to be on Fox. Okay? It was my money. So if I want to flush it down the toilet, I will. That's his money. You want to flush it down the toilet. Now, the difference, the one thing that I think he didn't expect or people don't understand, when I talk to people who are newly getting into this business and they'll say, okay, so what should I expect? What do I? And it's the first thing I say is, you're going to have to understand that you're going to play to only half the audience available. You're going to play to half the country because you're going to be on so many lists that they are going to target you relentlessly. They will destroy your reputation. They will do everything they can to destroy you as a person, destroy your family, destroy your business. You just understand going in. This company that we started with you, 12 years ago, Blaze? If this were any other company, it would sell in the billions, okay? It would easily be a $1 billion company. Agree or disagree?
I mean, I don't know all the numbers, but yeah. Probably. Okay. It's very, very successful.
I mean, mm-hmm. We know companies that sold in this industry that were on the left sold for over a billion, and we dwarf them, okay? Mm-hmm. We're never going to get $1 billion for this, not in this climate. maybe our children will be able to do it when America goes sane again, because they've done everything to destroy it. Now, I did it on a smaller scale in the millions of dollars. He's doing it in the billions of dollars. So when he says this, and I think he knows, you're going to cut your advertising in half. You're never going to get the Disneys. And Disney, if Disney decides on its own, you know what, I don't want to advertise on Twitter. Fine. Disney's rapidly putting themselves out of business anyway. It's not a long-term client for anyone. So if they decide on their own, they want to do that, that's fine. But what he's fighting, and he now knows, are organizations like Media Matters. He used the word blackmail. It's not blackmail. It's economic terrorism. Anyone who says, you must do this, or I'm going to boycott all of your advertisers. Then they lead a campaign, like they led a campaign against me, and they came up with all these advertisers that were no longer going to advertise. And the funniest one was Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes-Benz has never advertised on a Glenn Beck program, ever. Before there were anything political, they just don't advertise on shows like mine. Okay, they just don't. And so Media Matters, why would Mercedes-Benz make a statement that they will never advertise unless somebody had a gun to their head saying, say it, okay? And quite honestly, Mercedes-Benz, if you want to take a stance against me because I'm a, quote, Nazi, let's have that fight. I mean, I have pictures. I have pictures of Hitler in your product. You don't have a picture of Hitler listening to my show, so let's have at it. I mean, jeez,
it's just ridiculous, right. And it is. I mean, it is a form of attempted economic terrorism. I mean, it's not very successful. It's in many ways, it's more of a grift of the left than it is some pressure campaign on the right, because they convince their own donors to keep shoveling money so they can live in nice houses and fund their own lives. Yeah. When really, do they ever get anything done? I mean, do they ever accomplish anything?
No, they have accomplished this. They have divided the country.
Sure.
And made us into a country to where labels truly matter for some unknown reason. You know, that label is with that label, that's bad. That label with this label, that's good. So they've really accomplished that for a limited time, because over time it's just not true. So it's going to burn itself out. And they are teaching Elon Musk now the cost of not being popular. They are bullies. If you are beat up at school all the time because you're whatever. You beat up in school all the time. You learn the lesson. If I want to be this, if I choose that this is who I am, I'm going to get hit in the face over and over again, and I'll never be in the cool kids club. Fine. I never sat at the cool kids table. I mean, I was the one getting food thrown at me. You know, I was not the cool kid in school. And I know that comes as a surprise. Ever. So, you think I care? I'm used to it. I'd like to sit at the cool kids table, but not compromise and become something I'm not. Go F yourself. Who cares? Really? You think you're in a club that has to work to bully people to say, oh, you're the cool one. You're the cool one. You're stuffing people into lockers so everybody will be afraid to say, you're a fraud. I don't like you. And I'm going to compromise myself to sit at your table? No, thank you. I'm not going to play your Goebbels to your Hitler. Sorry.
And Elon Musk has, I mean, whatever amount of that you have, he has it times a million.
A million.
Right? So He just doesn't care. I mean, one of the reasons why Tesla was successful was because he didn't care if it lost a fortune year after year after year after year.
He didn't care.
He believed in it. He wanted to do it. He thought it was, as he says in this interview, he says he's done more for the environment than any single human being in history.
Which I believe is true. I mean, if you're talking about
From the left-wing perspective, yes. I would say yes. That's probably true.
It does more to the environment with the batteries and everything else. But
he's single-handedly responsible for the electric car movement and the success of it at this point, as limited as it is. But it is successful at Tesla. And he built that because for all those years, at the beginning, he didn't care, right? He didn't care if he lost money year after year after year after year. And he almost shut down. I mean, he wanted to make money, but he didn't mind hemorrhaging cash. By the way, just like at the beginning with you at this company, you didn't mind hemorrhaging cash as we were building this. Minded it.
But I minded it after a while when it was like, I'm out of cash.
But you didn't mind.
No. Risking it all.
Risking it, right? Yeah. It's the same thing with him. It's everyone told him, why the hell are you going to build a bunch of spaceships to go with SpaceX? Because he prioritized this mission that he believed was important over his money.
This is what makes him enemy number one for the left, because he doesn't care. And once you get past the fear of, oh no, they're going to cancel me. Oh no, they might say this about me. Oh no, I could lose my job. Once you get past that, nobody will screw with you, because you will frighten the hell out of all of them. Because when you walk into a meeting or you walk into an office, you're the guy with the twitchy eye that they all look at and say, good God, man, he just might do it. Yeah. I make promises to myself first on who I am, and then I'll make you a promise. If you ask me to violate who I am, see ya. I'd rather live in poverty than spend the rest of my life in hell compromising, and then because of that compromise, maybe spending all eternity in hell. No, thank you. I have my priorities.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Okay, so we have Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner on from the IDF in Israel to give us an update on what's happening, and specifically on the hostage situation. Lieutenant Colonel, how are you, sir?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. First of all, what is the mood of the people? I've been shocked to hear, well, I shouldn't say that, because this was like after 9/11 in America, how we rallied together, and after we really, once we started breathing again, we were optimistic and united. Is that still the case in Israel?
I would say we are still not breathing here. As I sit sitting in my Tel Aviv headquarters in the IDF spokesperson's unit, I have my television on, and everybody is glued to the television watching as two young women are being released as we speak. And this is the latest installment of the release of hostages, those 240 so hostages that were abducted by Hamas on the 7th of October. So we are still not breathing. We are still very, 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 very focused. Society is gathered around the need for a paradigmatical, a change that brings safety and security for Israel, for the south of Israel, but not only the south of Israel, everywhere around. We are this homicidal organization that has used the powers of government to create this weapon, this machine of terrorism, can no longer be permitted to have this power. And that's all. We have to get the hostages home, and then we have to get rid of Hamas.
Can you tell me why or who decided on what prisoners were to be released by Israel? Did they ask for this specific names or what? Because some of them are really nasty.
I think, you know, the underlining common denominator of all of those releases that they have either convicted for, violent crimes or intended to conduct violent crimes. The IDF does not consider the list is not really under our responsibility. And the government, with its decisions and deliberations with the other security services, makes the decision. But what we can see is, yes, indeed, some of them are nasty. Some of them try to blow up car bombs and stab civilians. Huge challenge. But, the government has made this decision in order to bring back those that have been abducted. There isn't anybody that hasn't been affected by the abductions. Myself, it's friends, it's family friends, it's relatives, it touches everyone and everyone in society. And this is why this is, it may be a price, but we always put life first. And this is the challenge with this ruthless enemy.
Out of the hostages that are remaining, how many are women and children? How many are American left?
I don't have that current breakdown. We've released up until today 99 women and children, babies, youngest of four and a half years old, eldest and women in their 80s, and there are still women and children that need to be released. The latest story is, of course, the story of these beautiful ginger babies, Kfir and Ariel Bibas, who were abducted, and we've been demanding that they be brought home with their mother, Shiri. This is more and more devastating news coming out about hostages and these people. But we are determined to bring every last one of them home. It's the instructions that we have been given, and we do believe that the operational pause advances the goals of the war of bringing home the hostages and dismantling Hamas.
I hope so. I hope you get back to business when it's... Don't listen to our administration. I don't know what our administration is doing, but I'm not going to ask you to comment on that. But please just do the right thing and make sure that the bad guys are all dead, quite honestly. We have been trying to find out... I can get the names of hostages really from almost every country, except for the United States. And, people were tearing down the pictures of the Israeli hostages, Palestinians were. And it's shameful. My staff wanted to, a couple of them wanted to take one to their synagogue, one to their church, the names of people and the names of the Americans so we could pray for them. We can't get the names. Do you know how many Americans and who they are?
So I'm very cautious on anything to do with the hostages, specifics about hostages' identities and so on. We don't know what Hamas know they have, and we need to be very cautious in publicizing and sharing information. We haven't shared any specifics about anybody. And I think that's a wise move at this time, and we need to pray for them as a collective.
Right.
We need to, we need to keep them in our thoughts. And what we are doing from the military's perspective is making sure that we can, gather the intelligence and seek out those that are holding them and be prepared for the next stage of this war and taking the war to Hamas.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel, I can't thank you enough for, your sacrifice. I think you were a reserve, weren't you? What were you doing on the 6th?
My day, I was on the 6th. I just came back from a vacation with my family in Florida. We were enjoying some good sun rays, and we came back from the U.S., and I was lying in jet-lagged on the 7th of October, very early in the morning, going through my social media at like 4:30 in the morning. And then my phone started to ring at 6:30 here. My wife woke up from the ringing of the phone, of the sirens of rockets being launched at us. And she said, "What's going on?" And I said, "There are sirens, rockets being fired down south." And as I said, down south, the sirens started to sound in my city, which is a suburb of Tel Aviv, so in the heart of the country. We went down to our shelter and took my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter. We went down to the shelter, and when we came up from the shelter, I saw the images on social media of Hamas paragliders coming over the fence. And I looked at my wife and said, something very different is happening today. I think they're going to call me up. And she looked at me and she said, are they coming for us as well? Everybody feels this attack very, very personally. The assault on Israel's Israeli society, it's very personal to all of us. And so for me, there wasn't any question or a doubt. The country calls, I report for duty, and I'm very proud of being today able to speak on behalf of the IDF, and very proud that I have the confidence, and I hope that I'm worthy for the servicemen and women on the front lines. Mm.
Well, thank you so much, and I just want you to know there are millions of Americans, millions, no matter what you see on television coming from here, the hatred on our streets is reminiscent of the 1930s and 40s, and there are millions of us that will stand in their way. It's not going to happen again on our watch. Please convey that to everybody, that there are millions of Americans who are with you every step of the way.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so last night I was having a conversation with Sonia Hightower-Labosco, and this is how it ended. Listen to this.
Each, this person returned to the hotel. It is important to note that blank never set foot near the Capitol grounds. In fact, suffers from a disability that makes it difficult for her to walk. This air marshal with 27 years of experience, do you remember this case? What was he assigned to do?
I do, and that's his wife we're talking about, Glenn. He is a special ops air marshal. He actually assigns the teams of air marshals to follow these individuals that are on quiet skies or a selectee. So this air marshal actually came into duty. It was his job to sign the missions for that day, opened his computer and saw a photograph of his wife listed as a suspected domestic terrorist, knowing that she had nothing to do with the Capitol. She didn't even go to the Capitol that day, and we proved that through many, many different ways, from geo-tracking, her cell phone, her Uber receipts, you name it. All right. We proved it.
I've got less than a minute. You have to tell me if this is true. Did we actually use the air marshals to track a four-week-old baby?
Yes, Glenn. We're doing that now. The baby's 8 weeks old. The baby was not even conceived. It's an eight-week-old baby who's on the terrorist watch list. That is correct.
I didn't have time to fully delve into why our air marshals are following, and I bet it's not hard to track, the eight-week-old newborn that is now on the terrorist watch list. Now, one of my kids, two of my kids, they were born with, I believe, explosive stuff in their system, and when they would drop a bomb sometimes, it was nasty. But I never thought we should call an air marshal. But apparently, at 8 weeks, I mean, that's basic boot camp, isn't it? 8 weeks. What can these babies do to us? Sonia is with us again. Sonia, tell us the story of the eight-week-old baby.
Okay, Glenn, this story was just broke by Uncover DC and Wendy Mahoney. This eight-week-old baby is on the terrorist watch list, and it's not just one air marshal that's going to be assigned. It's going to be a minimum of three. So you're going to have three air marshals following this eight-week-old baby, no matter if the baby travels with their grandparents, if the baby just travels with cousins, it doesn't matter. Once the baby's on the list by their name, the baby is going to stay on that list.
Okay, hang on. Did the parents do something?
I think they got him for parading at January the 6th. I think he did face a charge. I think he either walked through the Capitol or he did something of that nature on January the 6th.
Oh my gosh. Now, not parading.
And this, I think this is his fiance that booked the tickets for her and the baby. I don't know that they're married. I think this was his fiance that he booked that she booked the tickets for her and the baby to go on, I think, a holiday vacation down to Puerto Rico.
So he wasn't even with them.
No, he wasn't with them then. No, he wasn't.
Huh.
So he's with them now. They are a family. So they were flying down to visit family, I think, down in Puerto Rico. And lo and behold, you know, they get to the airport. She gets to the airport. They print out the boarding passes. And here's the baby. As you can see, I think I sent you the picture. It's the infant. It's the infant on the boarding pass. It says INFT. And then it has the four quad S's showcasing that they're on the watch list.
Well, has the baby blown anything up? I mean, I just have to ask. I mean, is the baby involved in things right now? I mean, you never can tell.
Baby wasn't even born. Baby wasn't even conceived. Wasn't even born then. Wasn't even a thought at that moment. This was, you know, back in January of 2021. We're going 3 years later into this. And I knew that we had been following a 6-year-old boy and a 9-year-old child. I knew that. I mean, that was a new all-time low for the information we received. But when we received the information on the 8-week-old baby, I mean, how low can you go within the government for these to pacify the swamp, right? Because this is who we're pacifying in TSA with the air marshals. We are pacifying the swamp members that want Americans targeted because they exercised their First Amendment right, or they attended a rally, or they weren't even there. Anybody affiliated with January the 6th, whether you were at the Capitol or the rally, it does not matter. The swamp wants you targeted.
So to give people perspective, and I, Sonia, I believe one of the most of, I think we did two things right after 9/11. We put air marshals on the plane, and we made the door to the pilots bulletproof. Those two things, I think, are the best things we ever did. Everything else was just government nonsense, for the most part, I think, at least the way it's been executed. The air marshals are not on board of our planes now because they're not only just following babies and children, but they are also on our border, correct?
That is correct, Glenn. We have been forced to go down to the border for over 2 years now. The Air Marshal National Council, the group I work with, we've been fighting that because we know that we have very limited resources in the first place. I mean, the air marshals are only a couple of thousand specialty group inside of TSA, which TSA is a big administrative 65,000 bureaucratic agency. And then you've got this little small law enforcement component inside of this administrative agency, and they're smothering our duties as law enforcement with all their bureaucratic administrative red tape that they're using for a political agenda.
And our air marshals are doing what on the border?
They are doing non-law enforcement duties. Non-law enforcement. They are driving people to the hospital. They are walking around the facility once an hour and checking a box saying, well, everything's quiet. I didn't see any doors unlocked. They're at the front gate signing vehicles in and out. Okay, well, there's a delivery. All right, this person came in at 2:00 in the afternoon. They left at 2:30. They're handing out water. They're making sandwiches. They are doing nothing that they should be doing to thwart hijackings in the aircraft.
What's your biggest concern on all of this?
My biggest concern is we're going to have another 9/11, Glenn. We're blinking red. If there was ever a time in this country it's not even incompetence. I used to think this was incompetence. This is intentional. How can you take the only resource we have from the air and put them down on the border to do no duties? That's the thing. We're not even doing anything down there, and we're letting the American people, we're ushering in illegals, we're catering to the illegals, and the American people who buy plane tickets and pay security fees and expect to be safe have nobody looking out for them.
You know what's amazing to me is I didn't even think of the air marshals. Story after story, sometimes it feels like it's once a week, we'll hear about some crazy person on a plane that started an argument or whatever. And not once have I thought, wait a minute, where's the air marshal? Because usually the air marshals are the ones that, you know, hey, sit down if there's a problem. You don't usually have to land the plane right away for some jerk, which the airlines have been doing. All these incidences of these jerks on planes, that's maybe happening more often because we don't have an air marshal. Is that logical?
Glenn, that's logical. Look, and these have been some very serious incidents. If you look over the last 2 years just alone where we're fighting, while we know that air marshals are on the border, we've had flight attendants stabbed. We have breaches of the cockpit.
Wait, what?
Yes, we've had flight United Flight 2609 from Los Angeles to Boston. In 2022, there was a flight attendant stabbed on that aircraft. That's correct.
What did they use? A plastic knife?
He went in. We're not sure where he got it. He made some type of homemade shank in the bathroom. We don't know if he had it on him or did he get a spoon. We don't know how he did this, but he made a shank.
Okay, so that happened in the last 2 years, and we still don't know how he did that. Okay, and then the cockpits have been breached?
Yes. There's been level 4 threats that's been called out with the captain stating that the cockpits were trying to breach the cockpit. There's been incident after incident that has happened, and every one of these incidents were normal flights air marshals would have been on. The long-haul flights, remember, that's what Al-Qaeda took our planes for when they took them. They took the planes with the most fuel. So that's East Coast to West Coast. Those are flights we would have normally been on, but we're not on those flights because we're at the border or we're following January 2021 people that potentially were at the rally or at the Capitol. That's what our duties are doing.
Your organization, you represent the federal air marshals, and you know you've done this. How worried are the air marshals about? I mean, you know, the country's at red alert. We know this. We've heard it. We've heard Homeland Security say we're on high alert right now for terror. What are they saying? What are the actual air marshals saying? They got to be going crazy.
Going nuts, Glenn. They're going nuts because this is 22 years we've been fighting. Look, 22 years, a lot of the men and women that came over right after 9/11. 22 years that we have tried to prevent this from happening again, and we are being handcuffed by this administration, totally handcuffed. There's nothing we can do because this administration doesn't want us to do anything.
Okay, so what do we do? I mean, besides
exposes. We've got to get out of TSA, Glenn. We got to get the air marshals to a law enforcement entity. This is what happens when you have an administrative bias, political bias association like TSA running a law enforcement program. They've weaponized the air marshals for their political gain.
Well, we're not going to send them to the FBI or any other government institution. I mean, I think they should be locally, you know, wherever they're living, that airport should possibly do it. I mean, you know, San Francisco, I think, is the only airport that doesn't hire the TSA to run their security, and they catch more things than any other airport. And I can't believe I'm giving credit to San Francisco, but you can't give it to another government agency. Sonia, thank you so much. I'd like to talk to you again on how we can serve you and help get our air marshals back on our planes. Something is going to happen, and there will be no doubt. Who exactly is responsible for terrorist activity in this country? Name them right now. Sonia, thank you for exposing this. God bless you.